days ago, preaching in Florida, I've decided that since I get so many invitations to preach, I've decided that from now on, December, January, February, and March, I'll go to Florida only. It's not a personal matter. The Holy Spirit has directed me about this thing. But I... Anyway, preaching in Florida, I got up early one morning, and 10:30 or so, and got up early, and looked outside, and right across from the room was a mobile home where retired people live. Now, it so happened, I did not know it, but Dr. Robertson was there in that conference. I didn't know it. I got off the airplane, was picked up, and the fellow picking me up said, "Dr. Howes, Dr. Robertson is coming in just a minute, so I'll get him while you get your bags ready." So Dr. Robertson said, "Dr. Howes, what are you doing here?" I said, "I'm preaching First Baptist Church, Hollywood, Florida." He said, "I am too." I said, "They didn't tell me." He said, "They didn't tell me you're coming either." I said, "Man, they don't tell us." I said, "I probably wouldn't have taken the invitation if I'd known you were going to be here." And he said, "Man, I wouldn't either." And we preached together on the first night. He preached first, I preached last. And then next morning I got up, took a little walk, and I walked over there to this mobile home area where the retired folks live. And I got to just walking around. I saw a fella coming out to pick up the paper. And he was retired. He was 67 years of age. And he had in front of him, he was fat. And he bent over for the paper and tried to reach it. Couldn't reach it, so he squatted it down for the paper. And he got it. So I said, "How are you this morning?" He said, "Fine, how are you?" I said, "Good." I said, "Are you retired?" "Yes," he said, "I'm retired." I said, "Well, wonderful. And what do you do with all your time?" "Well," he said, "I come and get the paper, and then I come and get the mail, and then I come and get the evening paper." "What else do you do?" "Well," he said, "in between, I read the mail and read the paper." I said, "Well, you're enjoying this kind of life." I'll never forget what he said. He said, "Man, I've got to. I got too much invested in it." I walked back up the room, right next to my room, with Dr. Robertson. This man, 67, Robertson, 71. His drape was open, and he had his work spread out across the table there. And he was going to town on work. Church, college, seminary, all the ministers of Highland Park Baptist Church. And there's a 71-year-old man in here, up, crack of dawn working. Here's a 67-year-old fellow out here. By the way, he used to own his own company. Now his schedule is, go get the paper and read it, go get the mail and read it, go get the paper and read it, and go to bed. And he said, "I got to enjoy it. Then I got to. I got too much invested in it." And I got thinking, there's a secret to life, I think. There's Lee Robertson inside that room with all his papers, and Robertson had more fun he's having. Now, what's the difference? Each one was doing that thing. His heart was where his investment of a lifetime had been. That fella had spent his entire lifetime investing his money for retirement days, and Robertson spent his entire lifetime investing his money and his life in the lives of others. And here he is, happy as he could be. Dr. Robertson walks out, "Good morning, Dr. House. Good morning. That's right. And glad to see you. And things are well." And I said, "Dr. Robertson, how you doing?" He said, "Fine." I said, "Do you feel well?" He said, "Yes, always feel well. That's right. Always feel well. That's right. God bless you." And he says, "God bless you," almost every paragraph. "God bless you. That's right. God bless you." And I said, "You feel good?" I said, "You feel as well as you did when you were young." He said, "That's right. That's right. God bless you. Feel better." "Never felt better in my life. That's right. Can you work as much?" "Yeah, that's right. God bless you. Can work as much as ever could." And and I said, "Look at that fellow over there." I said, "They're over there just waiting for the Grim Reaper." I said, "That man over there, people over there, they get the mail and get the paper, get the mail, get the evening paper, and the most exercise a fella get was squatting down to get the evening paper, the morning paper." What's the difference? Robertson's found the secret that man hadn't found. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Now, I'm not 67. I'm not 71. But I'm getting there. I'm on my way. And I hope I'll get there. Somebody said, you dread growing old? I said, not at all, considering the alternative. I don't. So You say, well, Brother Hiles, what do you say? I'm saying I'm 54, and I noticed something, and everybody in this room who's over 45 knows it's true. As you get older, the interest in life began to wane. Whatever today, when I can tell you, every baseball player in the big leagues, his batting average, every pitcher, and the pitching average, and how many strikeouts, and there were so many things. Boy, by nature, I was 35, 40 years old. I could hardly stay off the ball field. And I'd get on a basketball court, and I had to shoot. And now, I don't care if I ever shoot or not. See, I'm all shot. When you're all shot, you don't shoot. I get up and go, then got up and went. But you see, I have to force it now. And anybody does. I have to work at it. I have to work to have interest. And I do, constantly. I read things I don't want to read. So somehow more things will capture my attention. And I can be more for more things. And I try to be more knowledgeable now. Because the natural tendency is, like the old lady on the front porch, the pastor said, what do you do? I don't ever want to do anything else. She said, I don't know. And I don't care. All I want is my rocking chair. And that's the way you get now. Before you know it, you get that way. And so if you get older and keep interest in life, you do it on purpose. Well, you say, preacher, all the interest you have in life, how do you keep interested in things? What the Bible says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Russell Anderson was down, not with me, but he's down in the area, at a school of finance. And so he said, Dr. Hiles, if it's okay with you, I'll ride back with you on the plane. He was coming back to Chicago and then going out to speak in Salt Lake City, Utah. And he said, look, I'm coming back to Chicago. Let's just fly together. So we did. And I was sitting over here. I was doing some work. Russell Anderson over here at his Wall Street Journal. And he reads that thing. All those little old figures there. Looks like a trigonometry book to me, or a geometry book. And hey, what are you reading, Russell? He said, the futures. The futures. Now, I thought it was prophecy. I could care less. He said, Dr. Hiles, you know the price of gold is up? Well, that means an awful lot to me. I mean, he must have said the price of pins up, or brass. He said, yeah. And he said, the silver's doing pretty good, too. The old silver I know was the one that Lone Ranger used to ride. And so, now, Mr. Lively here, he's a silver tycoon. That man's got several dollars invested in silver. But I tell you what, I got you one thing. Have you kept up with silver this week? What is silver selling for right now? $14.82. He said about $14.82. You say about $14.80. But $14.80. Brother John, did you know that? You didn't know that. Could you care? Have you prayed about the price of silver lately? You haven't. For the Lively. Have you prayed about the price of silver lately? Watch it. He quit. King's X. He won't play anymore. And I said to myself, there's Russell Anderson. Boy, he's got... Yeah, he's going down through the thing like a young fellow with the box scores in the sport page. And all those, the Dow Jones is up. Oh, I don't know where Dow Jones lives. He said, Dr. Hiles, look at these futures. And I looked at him. I said, yeah. Boy, that's something. And I thought that's the difference in Robertson and the fellow sitting over there waiting for the paper. You know why Anderson reading the stock market page? He got some treasure there. You know why I could care less? I ain't got no treasure there. Not at all. Yeah. Where your treasure is. Now, Russell Anderson one day sat down and said, I want to read the stock market. Boy, it looks interesting. He read it. He said, look, I like this. Think I'll put some money in there. You don't do it that way. First thing you do is you put your money in. And then you get interested in the treasure, and in the future, and the stock market. And by the way, I'm not a brilliant man on the stock market. I try to keep up with it a little bit, and I'm not quite as ignorant as I'm displaying myself this morning. I'm afraid you college students will think you should not. Shut your big fat mouth. Anyway, but I'm saying that's it, right there. That's it. There's Anderson over here. And boy, listen, he is reading that thing like it was a comic book. He is reading it like Evans is reading Button Jeff. I mean, he was absorbed in that thing. Wall Street Journal. I looked through that whole paper and couldn't find a picture in it. Not a one. And he was reading and reading and reading. Why? Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Hey, this morning, Evans got up and prayed. Did you notice his prayer? I said, pray for our people. Now get this. I said, pray for our people. He hadn't prayed for our people yet. He prayed for the students. He didn't pray for a single deacon we got. Of course, he's concerned all of them can die with flu. Of course, I'm concerned I feel the same about myself. He didn't pray for the choir. You can sing yourself to death. Of course, he's concerned. Croak and choke and get 110 fever. He don't care. You want somebody to pray for your church, don't ask Evan. I stood here with a broken heart, a sincere burden on my shoulders, and I said, our people are sick. Pray for them. And Dr. Evans gets up and says, pray for the, your Lord, bless those that have the flu. And the next word was student. And the average member of this church would like for all the students to get the flu, so they can get a decent seat every once in a while. But as Evans, student. And they can't enroll the next semester. Now, he didn't mean that. He means they can't pay their bill the next semester. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Evans is at the school. His office is at the school. His interest is at the school. His life is spent at the college. And when he thought about influenza, next word, student. Student. He doesn't care about your kids in the nursery. He doesn't care about the senior citizens with the snow-top roofs, with the palsied hands, and the uncertain walk, and the stooped shoulders, and the furrowed brow, and the wrinkled face. Evans doesn't care about them. All he's concerned about is the student. Why? Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. That's right. Now then, the other day, I can tell you how to live an interesting life. You just keep putting your treasure in a lot of places. That's it. That's it. I love this church. My heart's in it. My treasure got in it first. I love Baptist City. I love those buildings out there. Grade school, junior high, high school. Those boys' dormitories, and I love that place. You know why? Because one day I opened my pocketbook and I gave every dime I had to my name to put that place out there. I love it. Why? Where my treasure is, there is my heart. And the people that love this church the most are the ones who give the most, and the ones who love it the most didn't love it first and give second. Listen, God loveth a cheerful giver, but he'll take it from any old grouch. Now that verse, God loveth a cheerful giver, is not saying that you ought to be cheerful before you give. No, sir. The first thing you do is you give because God commands you to give. You give because you're obligated to give. And there'll come a time when you get so wrapped up in a person or an institution, a church or a school or a ministry, you get so wrapped up in it, all of a sudden you'll say, I enjoy giving to it. You see, you start off by giving because it is your duty to give. And then as you give because it's your duty, as your heart follows your treasure, a little bit behind your treasure. And as your treasure precedes you, as the John the Baptist say, there cometh one after me, a heart. And the heart comes, and then the heart changes toward the ministry and toward the object. Let me say something, folks. Somebody said to me, Dr. Miles, I envy how deeply you feel about people. And how deeply you love. Somebody said this after John Rice's funeral. They said, you looked on the platform at that funeral I got a letter the other day from one of his daughters. She said, Dr. Tiles, you look grief-stricken on the platform. And she said, suddenly it dawned on me, I know why. You didn't get to see him as he got helpless. You didn't see him suffer. You didn't pray for God to take him. She said, you were away from him. We were there. We got where he prayed for God to get him out of his misery and take him on to heaven. You didn't do that. And after the funeral, somebody said to me, he said, how did you love him so much? And I said, I'll tell you why I loved him. His closet's full of suits I bought for him. And full of, he hardly has an overcoat that I didn't put on his back. And shoes I put on his feet and a ring I put on his finger. You ask a mother who has a child who's retarded. And you see, do you know that's why? That many women never fall in love with their husbands because the guy is old and helpless. I can tell you that many women right now who didn't give that much about their husband until he got old and helpless. And they had to cut up his meat and help dress him. He had a stroke or a heart attack. Bring his food to his bedside and take him to the bathroom and put on his clothes for him. And all of a sudden their treasure went. And after the treasure went, the heart went. That's why I love so many things in life. I give this many things in life. I've learned that the only thing you can use your money for is either retire or let your wife's next husband have it. Well, let your kids have it and ruin them. But I've learned this. I've learned if you can take whatever small amount of money that God entrusts you with, then you invest it where your treasure is. Somebody said, Brother Hiles, after Dr. Rice's funeral, I said, I'd give anything in the world to feel as deeply as you feel. And I said, hey, by the way, that's exactly what it costs. I'd give anything in the world to feel as deeply about folks as you. And that's exactly what it costs. It costs giving anything in the world. But as I invest in Dr. Evans, I suddenly love him more because I have more invested. As I invest in Mr. Lively, I suddenly love him more because I have more invested in him. As I want to love Brother John more. And you know, it's awful hard to love Brother John Colson. He doesn't even pray, not silver. But I mean, as I invest in him, my heart goes first, Brother John, and my money goes first, then my heart follows. My money goes first, Brother Lively, my heart follows. If I have some money invested in you, I'm more concerned about you. There are a few things in all of your lives in which I've invested. A few things. And I'm concerned about those things. If, for example, if I've invested a little bit of money in, let's say, your car, then I want to know how your car is doing. If I invested in your house, I want to know how your house is doing. I drove by your house the other night, Brother John, just to see what you've done to it. Because we invested the money in your house recently. I didn't see a bit of change. But I'm saying that my treasure went. And I've learned something in life. I've learned if I want to be a happy, active, interested, older person, I've got to let my treasure precede me. For where my treasure goes, my heart is of necessity following right along behind. Somebody said to the house, could I say this? I have a lot of things that are not admirable. I have many things that I wish I could improve in my life. But if I had one thing that gives me joy that I wish I could help you to acquire, it's the feeling I have toward my enemies. That's the one thing that I would love to, because I know what it'll do to enrich your life. Now you say, preacher, people say, how in the world can you love people that slander you? How can you love people that slander your family? How can you love people that criticize you? How can you love people that stab you in the back? In the first place, I won't love them because God commanded me to. In the second place, I won't love them because the blessings of God upon my life are dependent upon the condition of this heart right here. Well, you say, how do you do it?
That's exactly how I do it. Somebody gets mad at me, I start investing in them.
Everybody's going to get mad at me now, aren't you?
Yeah.
How many times, Ms. McKinney, have you sent a Schofield reference Bible to somebody who wrote me a hot letter? How many times have I sent checks or given cash to people who hate my insides? We had a guest at this church one time who gave himself to ruining me. And I won his friendship because I started investing in him. I mean investing money. You say, why invest money? Because I want my heart. I want to feel right toward those that hate me. And the Bible says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So if you don't like me, give me some money. You'll like me then. And I'll like you. Folks, a man said to me yesterday, he said, well, I just can't see it.
I told him the same subject.
I just can't see it. He said, but you understand the problem. You understand what she did to me. And I don't care what she did to you. You're commanded to love her. Well, how can I do it?
I said, send her some money. Spend some money. I'm thinking about a man right now that hated my insides, a preacher. Many years ago, 15, 20, hated my insides. And I recall, oh my soul, 15 years ago, Mother was over to our house. And Mother has an awful hard time. Mother can love her enemies, but she don't love my enemies. And she said, son, that man has done you more dirt than anybody in the world. She said, he's just a crook. And I said, now hold it, Mama. You don't talk like that in my house. And Mama said, I'm your mother. I said, okay, let's go to your house. You can talk like that. But I said, we're not going to talk like that in my house.
What you say for the house, what he did was true.
One of the most malicious things you can ever do is talk about truth that's bad. Looks like to me when a group get together, deacons meeting or a WMS circle or a Sunday school class meeting, or a college party, or a high school get-together, or a teacher's officer's meeting. Looks like to me there's enough good things of God and good things that God's done for us. But you stay with the house. It's true. I know it's true. I'm not going to talk about garbage. It's true. No. What did I do to this fellow? My mother said, son, she said, if you knew all the dirt he's done to you, you'd get it. And I said, you don't know all the dirt he's done, Mother, but I said, you're not going to talk about it in my house. And I said, I don't mean to be unkind, but I said, you're going to go outside if you keep talking like that about this preacher. And if ever a man in the world hated me, it was that man. Once a month, I'd buy him a gift and send it to him. He never knew where it came from. I never signed it. I sent it from a different state every month. I'd send him a gift. I mean, I'd send him a transistor radio. I'd send him a cross pen pencil set. You know, I gave the guy so much. I learned to love him. And I learned to pull for him, even though he hated me. By the way, tragedy came in his life. He had to leave the ministry. And I wrote him a letter and I said, my dear brother, I know you've left the ministry. I said, you're too good a man not to be used of God. Let me help you get started again. I said, if you want to, I'll help you get revivals lined up and help you get started in evangelism. Or I said, if you want a pastor again, I'll help finance your salary for 6 months to a year while you get started in a new church. Or I'll recommend you somewhere. I want to meet with you and help you get started again. He wrote me back and he said, dear Dr. Hiles, I can't believe what you did. I cannot believe. He said, I can't even comprehend. He said, well, the house, how do you do it? Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. You know, the hardest thing for preachers to do is to enjoy the success of churches in their own area. Did you know that people are amazed when they hear these preachers in this area speak so well of me. Some of the best friends I have are preachers. Brother Shorter over here, Oak Forest. A beloved friend. Brother Paterko out here at Hobart. A beloved friend. East Chicago, Brother Larrabee. A beloved friend. Brother Voteman out at Chesterton. A beloved friend. And people always, across the country, they say, hey, how is it when you're close to Ohio? Not a fair. One of these men will say, Brother Barber out here said it so many times. He said that Jack Howell's one of the best friends I have. Did you know that I want all these churches to do well? And did you know if somebody gets mad at me in the church here and goes out and joins one of these other churches? Did you know I don't get bitter toward either party? You say, why? How do you do? I've got to like Brother Hanks over at Salt Village. He's running for mayor of Salt Village. You hear about that? He's running for mayor. Give me a good idea. You say, Brother House, you like the big old guy? Yeah, I like him. Well, the house, has he ever stolen any of your members? You don't steal people. You can steal a pen, a book, or a billfold, but you can't steal a human being. Well, the house, why do you like him so much? Well, several years ago, his school was going under. We raised $7,000 out here in this auditorium. Sent $7,000 out to Salt Village Baptist Church, a few miles over here, close enough to work the same field with us. So, well, why do you love him so much? I got $7,000 invested in that school out there. I don't like to see my investments fold up. Where are your treasure is? Every Sunday when I leave, I go home. Sunday afternoon, I drive down Columbia, and here comes a Dyer Baptist Church bus. In our field. Can you imagine a church sending a bus to another town? I'm sure most of you folks don't know that goes on, but it does. I mean, there it is. He said, the house, what do you think? You ever want to get an air rifle and shoot the tires? Yeah. I mean, no. Why not? Oh, too many things to mention. Too many things to mention. I remember that when their assistant pastor, Brother Feeney, I'm not sure he's out there still. He's still out there. When he moved to this area, they couldn't afford a parsonage. One of the sweetest stories I ever heard. Brother Davis, our deacon, was a builder. He came to me one day and he said, for the house, he said, pray for me. He said, I got a house I can't sell. He said, I've got to sell it. If I can't sell it, I'm in serious trouble. And I began to pray for days for God to help Brother Davis sell that house. Put it on my prayer list. Prayed for him. I forgot about it. About the thing, but God help Brother Davis. Didn't know where the house was. Didn't know whether the house was in Kentucky or Wisconsin. Didn't know where it was. So, got a call from Brother Barber. I think it's Christmas Day. He said, Dr. Howes, do you know any real estate man that could help us find a house for Brother Feeney, our assistant pastor, coming here? So he could get a house cheaply. And I said, no. I said, what? He's got one picked out. Yes, he's got a house picked out, but he can't afford the down payment. I said, what's the down payment? He said, $6,000. I said, we can take care of that. I gave quite a bit myself, and I forget how he got the rest of it. I think maybe I embezzled it from the church. I'm not sure what. But anyway, I think it maybe came, I don't know where it came from, but I recall we got the money. Paid the down payment on the house out there. Brother Feeney had a nice place to live. Assistant pastor at Dyer. I never forget it. Walked up to baptize next Sunday night. Brother Davis walked in and said, Brother House, thank God your prayer's answered. I sold that house. I said, you did? Good. He said, I said, who to? He said, Brother Feeney out there, the assistant pastor at Dyer. Isn't that wonderful? Huh? Almost makes you believe in God, doesn't it? Now, I'm saying, you say, Brother House, how you feel about the Dyer Baptist Church? Love it! Love it! Why? Where your treasure is, that was your heart be also. That's why one reason I love Brother Turco in the Hobart Church. I go out to Lowell, First Baptist Church, Lowell. I don't know, all you folks know this. Now, this church started that church. First building they had, this church built it for them. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. I'm saying, folks, that the great secret of your life, one great secret of life,
to keep interested, how to have an interesting life, is get your pocketbook out and take the money out of it. If all you do is stack it up and stack it up and stack it up, one of these days you'll be in some little retirement place somewhere, trotting out there over your big pot belly, trying to reach over and pick up the newspaper, and then read it, and then go get the mail, and then read it, and go get the paper, and then read it. Why? Because that's where your treasure's been.
Or you can be like the older man up in the room working. The life that's still full of excitement and thrill. Who's invested his life and his money in others. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also.